Hello everyone and welcome to Dragapedia with me, Rita Safin.
And me, Stacey Rex.
Today we talk all about drag successes, where have we come from and where we're going to go.
And where did you come from, Miss Cotton Eye Joe?
And who was our special guest today, Stacey?
Our special guest was the one and only icon legend, Miss Rory.
Take a peek behind the persona of Miss Rory. Hear how she got her start in drag and what she considers her biggest successes to date. How has your life been, Stacey?
My life has been a roller coaster, and that has only just been in the last year. That's my life has been a roller coaster. Life is a highway.
We're not here to get demonetized, Stacey. You don't even earn enough money as it is.
But now my life, like I would say, my life is a bit of a roller coaster. Like I don't know when, like I'm coming or going. It's a very crazy life. Like I lead. I don't know about you, Miss Frida, but I lead a very hectic, crazy life.
I've got a lot of things coming up that I'm very excited for.
Sly.
No, I've got a lot of I've got a lot of things in my life that I'm very excited for, and I've got a lot of things that I'm doing this weekend that I'm really excited for. But also undrag related, just I'm in a very good place and there's just a lot of good things happening for me. I can feel that my hex has been lifted from whoever casted it all that time ago. So that's lovely. Thank you so much for putting an expiration date on that. And I don't know. Like, you know when you just sort of sit there and go, God, everything's just going into place. Like, obviously, not
the,
everything's perfect.
The pieces of the jigsaw are slotting in.
Not everything's perfect, but everything is great. So I'm not complaining, really.
It's going well.
Yeah, it is going well. And Drag Castle's going well, which is a good thing. Because
going from strength to strength.
Because obviously you do loads of cool things, like you do main stage pride and you go, oh, well, that's it. That's me done now. Like, Drag Castle's dead now. Like, that's... And then you do the stand and you go, no, now it's dead. Now Drag Castle's dead.
It's constantly we're never outdoing gonna... itself.
But it's... Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel very lucky to be in a position where people are still interested.
Yeah.
Which is nice. But that's the thing, like there's always going to be one person that's going to be interested in you. There's always going to be someone new. There's always new people that get born every day. So that's new audiences and new money in your pocket.
Inspirational. There's always somebody born every day. God, I'm getting that on a merch.
Come into dragcastle.store next week. Get wrecked, I said, get wrecked.
What we got coming up, Frida?
What have we got coming up, Stacey?
Tomorrow. Wait, no, because when this goes out, it'll be after tomorrow.
No, I mean in this episode. What have we got coming? What is this episode about? Oh, fuck me. I thought you recorded podcasts before.
I have. It's just been so long.
Jesus Christ.
It's too early in the morning, but we're filming with a guest who doesn't like to stay up past 9 o'clock. Right. Cut. Start again.
No, I'm leaving all this in. Yes,
so
we have got...
on drag... Not on drag, wait.
Dragapedia, babes. I know, so, it's been a long time.
So today on Dragapedia, we have got a wonderful, excited guest coming up who I'm very excited about having on the podcast today. And we will be talking about the amazing topic that is drag successes.
Yeah. Drag successes. Where have you come from? Where you been? Where are you
Where
gonna
did you
go?
come from? Where did you go? Where did you
Where
come
did you come
from?
from,
Cotton
Cotton
Eye
Eye Joe?
Joe.
Thank you. That's what I was meant to be singing. I have
Now,
not been
Frida,
to
tell
a
the gorgeous, gorgeous viewers at home on their little earphones that they're listening to or their Amazon speakers.
Let's hope
Who
they're
the
not
hell
putting
have
it
we.
through an Amazon speaker. Fuck me. No one wants to hear this at a barbecue.
Who have we got on the podcast today, my darling?
We have got the Queen of the Purple Palace, Miss Rory, on the podcast in like 10 minutes.
Production value.
If I had virtual DJ up right now, I'd be pressing that button so hard. Shot, 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 shots. Yeah. God, that is crazy. Who would have thought we would be interviewing celebrities this early in our podcasting
You know
career?
what? All it takes is if you don't ask, you don't get. And
Exactly.
that's my motto.
Then.
Whenever I hear the word like my life, all I think of is Megan Madday doing Shirley Bassey
Oh,
at All Stars.
I genuinely thought you were about to say, whenever I hear my life, I thought you were going to talk about Meghan Trainor. Like, I thought that's where that was going to go, which is why I was like, what the fuck are you about to say?
It's me,
Yes.
Meghan Trainor.
No, genuinely, whenever I hear that song, My Life by Shirley Bassey, I always think of Meghan Madday. Always.
Whenever I hear anything, I just think of Megan Madday because she's an amazing icon.
I love Megan Madday so much. Did you know I met Megan Madday? I've met Megan Madday a few times, but I properly spoke to Megan Madday at the Drag Idol final. I think it was your Drag Idol final. I properly spoke to her. And I nearly cried. Like, genuine, I'm not being funny. I literally felt
Absolute
myself
icon.
start to cry. And she was talking about how big of a fan she was of me for my final. And then she was talking about wanting to do a Drag Castle show. And I was like, yeah, I said anything for you, Megan Madday. Anything.
That
So.
was like, I always forget, like, Megan was in the era of like some of the biggest like drag idol names, like Anna, Heather, DeLonco,
Megan's
Gloria
done Drag
Hole.
Idol like three times.
Like, amazing. She definitely was in like that gap, like, she bridged the gap between like the testicle Cara era of idol to the, you know, the Heather, Anna.
Me and Scott used to stand in the bank and dance to Let's Have a Kiki by the Scissor Sisters, but just go, let's have a Megan Madday. Let's have a Megan Madday.
I love her very
And that would
much.
be the era of, it would
Very
just be
much
me and Scott, really.
a pioneer before. Why has this podcast suddenly become a Megan Madday stan show?
Yeah. I love every single Drag Idol season, she posts on, these are my Megan Madday tips for Drag Idol. And she talks about how what you
I
should and
remember
shouldn't be doing.
seeing that. She was such a pioneer, like, oh
I love her. I love her so much.
God. God,
Oh
what
my.
an amazing cast she was a part of as well. Like, that was one of the strongest top threes, her, Anna, Heather, and Megan.
Was Heather in there?
Yeah. So 2013
Really?
was Heather's first year.
Damn. I didn't realize that. I really did not realize Heather was in that year.
Heather's been part of two really good like top threes because she was part of that one, and then obviously October, DeLonco, and obviously Heather herself. But Heather's second year, funny enough, was the first time they'd ever done a five-person final.
Really?
Yeah.
What, who was it?
Obviously those three are named, and
Sorry,
then
why are we
two
talking about Drag Idol? This is not the Drag Idol podcast.
more.
Like, we cannot keep talking about Drag Idol. It's gonna get
Boring.
No, but why do we find ourselves keep talking about Drag Idol all the time?
Because the scene just comes back around to it.
Because of our special guest. No, I'm kidding. Hello?
Hello.
Hello? Hello? Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. Hi!
Oh my god.
Hello.
I caught on the screen. Hello.
Hello. Don't you both look wonderful today?
Well.
I'm too tall. This
Friday morning does to me.
This thing. Oh god, the dog's here, doesn't it?
Little Chinese Alan.
Come here.
I am obsessed with this dog. I am, though. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
He's
not one for looking at the camera, mind. I don't know.
That's okay. See? That's okay. I understand you're shy. It's all right.
Okay. I think one day you need to bring Alan into Boulevard and just have, like, Alan on top of the DJ podium.
You would, you know, I've thought about this, but he gets a bit pissy after a while. Well, literally, but he gets a bit like, God, I just can't be bothered with this, and then sulks himself off and off. So, but he's here talking there, so he wants to know what's going on.
You should do, you should, for the next Boulevard Panto, you should do Wizard of Oz and have Alan as Toto.
I don't know that we could afford it. That's the thing. It's like, has he got the rider?
Yeah, of course. When we found out from your dad, because we were talking to your dad at the Land of Hope, and nope, not Land of Hope and Rory, your latest one, Winging It, at the Tyne Theatre.
Yeah.
We were talking to your dad, and he told us that you moved to Lothal, and I was like, oh, she's round the corner from me, because we live in Windy Nook.
Oh, Windy Nook.
Uh-huh.
My auntie lives in... I don't know whether it is classed as Windy Nook, where the Fiddlers is.
Okay, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh.
She's just over from there, that little estate, my Auntie Margaret.
Oh, nice.
So I know the
and
area.
I'm sat here like, I don't know where any of these areas are. I just know the scene and my house.
And the one route in between.
And the corner shop.
And the shop, yeah. Well, Lothal is just like where you live, but... very middle class.
But with running water.
Yes, and indoor electrics. And
double glazing.
Yes.
Just because we have a well in our garden, leave me alone.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's vintage.
It's character.
I was going to say it's character building, isn't it? Going down to the well each morning. Like,
it's retro!
Like Cinderella. No white with a fucking beard on your finger and all this. But you've had a few beards on your fingers, haven't you, Frida?
Welcome to Dragapedia, Rory. Thank you very much.
Welcome to this lovely podcast that I was asked to do once Claudia Gabor quit drag. It's a lovely little podcast.
Has
it's amazing.
She has. Yeah.
Oh, I liked her. Yeah, she looked like Jennifer Coolidge.
She did. She did, yeah.
Great her. Hard-faced, I liked her.
No, yeah, she did. She quit drag kind of, because of COVID, I guess, like everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
It either made or broke you, to be honest. So, yeah, COVID finished and she was like, I'm off.
She went for ITV now.
What?
I swear I heard she's got a job at ITV, like in the makeup department.
Oh.
Okay.
I don't know. I thought I'd heard this, but obviously not.
Well, you're going to have to fact check this.
I'd have to get it fact checked, Frida. Message
I'll get her
after
on the
this.
Phone. Yeah. But yeah, thank you very much for joining us today, Rory. I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking some time out in your very busy schedule to come and talk to us clowns.
Clowns. Oh, clowns. No, clowns are funny.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We are very, we are very big fans of you, and you probably are very well aware, and you have a lot of fans everywhere, to be honest. How did you like I guess we'll start at the very, very beginning, because basically this podcast is kind of like talking about drag successes, talking about where have you come from, where are you going to go, where are you going to come from, Cotton Eye Joe. So kind of what was your sort of start in drag, and how did you kind of start it and move it up, I guess?
Yeah. I think the first time that I ever appeared on stage in drag would have been around about, I can't remember if it was 1997 or 1998. I think it was 1998, in a school production, middle school production. So I was like 98, I would have been 13. So it would have been 97, actually, I was 12. A school production of Blast Off. Now, you've probably not heard of Blast Off. It was a musical especially written for schools about going into space. I don't know what it was about, to be honest with you, but it was about like these kids going into space, like on a school trip, and something to do with their teachers or something. Anyway, I played a cleaner, right, called Gladys or Mavis or Doris. There was three, I can't remember which I played anyway, but I played a cleaner, and I was in drag, and there was three of us, and I just kind of like took over. And I remember standing on stage doing the bits of this shtick and whatever. And everybody laughed and thought, oh, my God, this is, wow, this is great. And I think I used to like making people laugh. Mm. So that was probably the first time. And then, you know, from 12 or 13 or whatever to like 17, 18, nothing more. But then I think I went to like a sixth form. Did you have like a sixth form fancy dress party? And I went in drag, the pictures of which, from which surfaced the other day from a friend from school. I was like, oh, no. My God, that's amazing. What a state. Like, shit. you got to think back then, right? There was no, well, drag wasn't very mainstream, really. Of course it was with Lily on the telly and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But your kind of day-to-day drag wasn't really that mainstream. Not like it is now, you know? So there was no sort of recourse to get anything. You'd have to go to Magic Box and get like the Smithies wig and charity shops and all this kind of business. Didn't know anything about makeup and so, and then it went from there. And then when I was maybe 8, well, I would have been 18, I started working on the bar in the bank. Now, the bank was a very different sort of animal back then to what it is now. Greta Lamour was the manager. And it was like a proper old man's camp pub, the bank back then. It was very special. And I worked on the bar. And anyway, Greta put us in drag. And it kind of all went from there. Did a show. And the show would consist of basically whatever Greta wanted to put in. It's like the old proper old school stuff. And the miming and all that business. And I was never really very good at it, the miming. I'm still not. And the concepts and the ideas. While you'll hear at Drag Idol, I'm always like, wow, I'm like fascinated by the man, especially you two, who I am a massive fan of, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Not you, Stacey. I would always, you know, I always say, my God, how does your mind work to put all this together and like to create this like mini sort of 4-minute production? Like, you know, my mind does not work like that. Anyway. Carried on with all that business. And I think once somebody had cancelled at the Yard. Now, back then, they used to do cabaret in the Yard on a Sunday night and a Monday night, right? And it would be at like 10 p.m. because the pubs, of course, would close at 11.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm making this sound like it's absolute ancient history. Well, it probably is ancient history for you. It's not so much for me or people of my generation or older. But yeah, the cabaret had gone at about 10 o'clock, Sunday and Monday. And somebody had cancelled anyway on this Sunday night. So Greta phones us and said, would I do it? You know, there was obviously, retrospectively, there was obviously nobody else that could have done this. And Adrian, God rest his soul, probably wanted to save a bit of money. So she asked me, and I think it was like 30 quid or something like that. And you know, I did a show, absolutely terrible, shite. But after the first number, I got the microphone and I spoke for a little while and people laughed. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe this is a thing. So we just kind of went on from there. There's more stories I could tell you about that. One that always sticks in my mind a couple of years later. This was maybe around 2004, 2005, I think it would have been, maybe 2006, they'd asked us to do a show at the Yard again. Well, anyway, I got absolutely mortal before, didn't I? Ophelia was doing all the bookings at the time for the Yard. And they used to have like the big names on there, you know, like all the touring queens. This is long before RuPaul and all that business. And Ophelia had asked us to do the Sunday. Well, out shit face, wasn't it? On the tequilas and all this kind of business. Oh God, I went on to do, I went on to do like Shirley Bassey dressed as Karen Carpenter. Didn't know where I was, what I was doing, and I got a right telling off from Ophelia. And that means like that's business, you know. And I think Adrian refused to pay us actually, and so that was a turning point.
That's when you know you've made it.
Yeah, I mean, she bollocked us, Ophelia. Which it also felt I'd let her down as well, which was a really bad thing. But during that time, anyway, I had a proper job. I worked in House Fraser first. I was a sales manager in Debenhams on cosmetics and all that business. And I used to just work in the bank on first off, it was a Sunday afternoon back in like 2005-ish. Sunday afternoon before Vicky Paris, she'd be on Sunday night, and then I think I got the Friday night, then eventually I got the Saturday night, and there wasn't really much drag going on at the time, you know. I was pretty much the youngest sort of one. Miss Lucy came a little bit after me, little Lucy from Easy Street, not Lucifer. She came a little bit after me. Lucifer came well after. Oh, Lucifer, she's the right cow, I love her. I like the Miss Lucy too. So yeah, so that was sort of like working with Copenhagen and all that business. And then that sort of take, so I had a normal job anyway. I never thought I would do this as a full-time thing. I just like worked one night a week and whatever. Obviously hosting Pride since 2008 or 2009. And then there was this rumbling that there was this new place going to open in town, in the big building out the back of like the bank and Switch. And John Little and David Fisher, who own the company, came over on a May bank holiday, 2010, end May bank holiday. And I think we're doing a charity day in the bank or something. And they were like, right, I want to show you over this building. And they took us over to this great big boxy building out the back that nobody actually knew what it was. It was just always there, you know what I mean?
And just existed.
Yeah, it was just there, you know, it was a part of the landscape. They took me inside and said, right, well, this is going to be this. The place is like a warehouse. It's all like sort of walkways and all this kind of stuff around. And they said, all right, well, this is going to be the stage here, and this is going to be a VIP area up here. There's going to be seats here, and there's going to be standing area here, very much like Funny Girls in Blackpool. Betty Legs Diamonds coming up. He was a massive, massive fan of Betty, I was, still am. And this is going to be like where you're going to stand up here, and this is going to be the such and such. And I said, what? I said, oh yeah, we want you to come over and do like the DJ Zoe part. Funny's here. And I was like, what the fuck? Really? Are you kidding me? This is, we want you to do it. You're our first choice. Okay, that's interesting. And I was thinking, well, how am I going to manage that? Like 5 nights a week with me full-time job. Never thinking that I would leave a normal job and do
right.
It.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you know, you're gonna have to make a decision. And it went on, we had talks and blah blah blah. In the end, 2010, I left my job. And that's when everything changed. Literally, everything changed. My whole life, it sounds quite wonky to say this and like, you know, like, oh my God. But like, everything changed at that moment on the 10th of November. 2010 when we
it's a scary process though, like leaving like such a stable job like a day job is a very scary process, because I remember when I first moved to Hull, I was absolutely like shitting bricks. I was like, oh, I'm gonna be sacked within a week, I'm gonna be crawling back to my mum's house being like, can I come back to live with you, because it's not worked out. And it is very like scary, but at the same time I found it really like thrilling, like to go from like working a day job to just fully being in drag at the start is really fun, and then you get 5 years down the line and you're absolutely knackered.
Try 13. State of us, that's why I'm backlit today. Holding my face up with cocktail sticks.
Did you not ever think when you kind of quit your job at, was it Debenhams that you were working at the time? Did you not ever think like quitting your job at Debenhams thinking, God, what the hell am I doing? Like, that is...
Absolutely. But that was tempered with the excitement of this new place opening. Because this is what I really wanted to do, a job like Boulevard, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I used to love Funny Girls and going down there and like, oh my God, it's absolutely amazing. Of course, Betty Likes Diamond. Wow. So it was a really exciting, it was probably the most exciting time
in
my life, actually, looking back now. I mean, God, there's been plenty more exciting points from then. But up to that point, the most exciting point in my life. And it was like, wow, wow. I mean, I was 25, which is a good age to make a change, I suppose.
Yeah.
Any age is a good age to make a change, but 25 just seemed like a really good, everything lightened up, you know? And it was, yeah, it was pretty amazing. But I mean, the fear, of course, as you say, was like, is this going to last? Like you say in there, Stacey. And with something like Boulevard, it's a huge gamble. Are people going to come? You know, will it work? But it was a gamble worth making. I always say it was the best gamble of my life, that, because it changed, as I say, it changed absolutely everything. I wouldn't be talking to you if it hadn't been for that. John Little, that owns the company, you know, all the bars and whatever, we were chatting not so long ago, and he says, I don't think you'd still be doing drag if it wasn't for Boulevard. And I says, well, what do you mean? He said, you would have got bored. You wouldn't have just wanted to stay in the bank or whatever, especially not these days when all there's the new lot do it cheaper.
But like, I think I spoke to you about this, Frieda, and I have always said, like, if it wasn't for like Boulevard, the people who are on the scene at the minute wouldn't be here because they wouldn't have done Idol. And it's kind of like this big snowball effect of, oh, because of like one little decision. And I think it's crazy.
Yeah.
So basically, you're saying it's all Rory's fault that there's all these baby queens coming up and infesting the scene.
It's all
oh, God. But I don't know about that. But yeah,
you
so
are
everything.
Like Adam and Eve to all the drag queens and kings. You've created us all.
I wouldn't quite say you were taken straight out of my rib. But at the minute, you'd have to get through some of the flab on the rib, unfortunately. I put a stone on, you know. But well, I haven't. I'm back to the weight. I'm back to the weight I normally am. But I managed to lose a stone.
When?
Without
How?
Even trying. And then, of course, because I'm a massive panicker, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I've lost all this weight. I must be dying. And it was just like retrospectively, sort of looking back now, it's just because I kind of cut out chocolate and wasn't eating rubbish at night. Like, when I sit down and watch telly at night time, because, like, you know, I am essentially a nana these days. I'd say, oh no, Chris, I don't fancy any. I'm not going to have any chocolate. I'm not going to have it, whatever. And quite easy to lose the weight like that. But then, of course, I'm thinking, oh my God, I've lost this weight. I'm going to have to put it back on. So, yeah, so I'm back to where I was.
I found that when I went vegetarian like a few years ago, I just lost so much weight instantly because I just wasn't eating all these like sweets that have loads of like pork and beef fat in them. And then I was like, what am I doing? And no, it's actually just because I went vegetarian.
Well, living with a vegetarian, as I do, my husband is a vegetarian. You can get a lot of, you know, jellies that don't have gelatin in. I can't recommend it to you. Aldi do some very good ones.
I've realised that now, and I've put it all back on. So there you are.
You know.
I remember when we went into lockdown, and I realised how much exercise I used to get out of doing drag, because I just piled a load of weight on as soon as we were in lockdown, and like realizing that I'm not mincing up and down a bar or like throwing myself around a stage, like it does actually burn a lot of calories, and I'm very grateful for that, just to keep me out of buying a gym membership. Keep the weight off.
That's why I walk so much now, because like Chris, my husband, he's out for a run at the minute actually. He runs and he's always in the garage doing his exercising and his kettlebells and all this business. And, you know, I just go to the garage at the bottom of the street for Twixes. And,
at least it's some exercise, though.
Well, exactly, yes. But that's why I'll walk to try and keep that momentum going. I'm just talking on the podcast.
Oh, very good, very good. Good afternoon, everyone.
He's back from his run.
Don't credit it. No, he hasn't been for a run, actually. I'll tell a lie. Been for a walk.
Oh, lovely.
been to algae weight rolls.
Well, all this exercise talk, it could lead us on to our next point of, like, you did the Great North Run, didn't you, in full drag? Would you have that down on, like, your bucket list of, like, drag successes?
Well, I did it in 2019. I just finished it last week. No, that was it. That was one of those amazing experiences that I didn't quite fancy doing, but got sort of cajoled into. And it was as everything with me, there's a sort of a funny, daft story about it. So I did it for the Graham Wiley Foundation. Now, Graham and Andrew Wiley, good friends of ours. Mm-hmm. And Graham asked, Sir Graham, asked me to do it, you know, for the foundation. And I said, don't be daft. I'm not doing that, Graham. He said, no, great fun. Like, imagine all the money you could raise, drag and all this. So I says, right, I'll do it on certain conditions, right? First condition, I want dropped off at the start line, right? I'm not pissing on with anything getting there. I want dropped off at the start line, right? Okay, Dan, no problem, no problem. I said, I'm not getting the metro back because there's too many people. I want to come back on a yacht with champagne. Yeah, no problem, Dan, no problem. Thinking. A couple of weeks later, he was like, right, I've got the yacht booked. There's your sign-up sheet. Start raising the money. And he did. And it was such an amazing experience, you know, because I ran on the... in the quote-unquote celebrity start line. I mean, much like a pride event. Much like a pride event, my name was the only name I recognised on the poster. But yeah, so we stayed in the Hilton the night before. It's a bit daft because we only lived around the corner from the Hilton at the time. Anyway, we stayed in the Hilton the night before and got picked up on the bus and taken down and just plonked on the start line with, like, literally 50,000 people behind you. It's like, whoa, it's amazing. Did the run, which was amazing. I would recommend it to anybody. It's such a wonderful experience. I'm by no means a runner, but you know, I love the Northeast. I champion the Northeast whenever I can, and it is just the Northeast encapsulated. Everybody cheering you on. Such a lovely, warm feeling. It's very emotional, actually. Of course, me being me, got to mile 8 of 13.1. My knees just completely went. I slowed down to have a glass of water, but the rest of my body didn't feel like it was slowing down. And my knees, I think the shin splints or whatever, just straight up. It was hideous. So I kind of hobbled the rest. Yes, they got to the end line and they kind of whip you off the end line, take you to a put you in a lovely tent and have a kebab. posh kebab,
obviously.
You know, yeah,
uh-huh. A Waitrose kebab.
Well, it was like, you know, like a proper kebab, not a kebab from a kebab shop, right? This is, you know, it was a bit. I just wanted a kebab from a kebab shop, but never mind. It was
not a kebab Rory had after getting pissed at the yard.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that type of kebab. So yeah, and then. Then came that we had to walk down to the port and got the yacht back. So yeah, that's an absolute bucket list thing. But just even to do it was, you know, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And he said, "Will you do it in drag?" So I'm not going to do it with my heels on. So I had my proper running shoes on for my dodgy feet. But yeah, that was a real iconic moment, I would say.
I love that.
Not necessarily one I would recreate, you know, it's been done. But it was great fun. So that was, when was that? September 2019. And then in September 2020, not September 2020, February 2020, just before the world went mad, I got to do the other thing that I really, really wanted to do when I was asked to do Sunday for Sammy at the arena. Sunday for Sammy, they call it the Geordie Royal Variety Performance. When they asked us to do that, I was like, whoa, really? So I was part of the Slack Lasses, not Loose Women, Slack Lasses. Charlie Hardwick, Ange Lonsdale, Denise Welsh and me did a great sort of sketch on that. And that was amazing.
Oh, nice.
In the arena, twice. A matinee in an evening, sold out arena. That was really with all of the like the cream of Northeast talent, you know. They have Feeder Zane, Pet Lads, and oh god, that was amazing. Oh, nice. Joe Cody, absolutely wonderful. That was
Ivy's manager, where she works, is actually from Off With His and Pet.
Oh, really? Who's that?
I've never seen. She's a woman. So
she's a lady.
I don't know. I don't remember, and she's probably going to kill us for mentioning it. But she was a woman in. She was one of the main characters in Off With His and Pet. Fun little fact.
Yeah, there you go. Fun facts abound.
And Ivy's mom always wants her to get like a photo or an autograph from her.
Oh, get one for Sue. Dead kind of Sue.
No, but you get asked. What was that, Stacey?
Oh no, carry on.
Oh, you get asked to do all these like amazing things, as you should, because you are an absolute icon. And you sort of have like fan bases all over the country. Like, I mean, whenever Scottish queens come up to watch Drag Idol in February, they're always absolutely obsessed with you. Is there any point where you kind of get some sort of, I guess, like imposter syndrome almost, and it's like, why is this happening to me?
Oh,
is this
time constantly? Mm-hmm. You know, like, wasn't very long ago that I was walking around Newcastle Airport dressed as Ibbity Trolley Jolly for the day, on and off planes and filming you know, the video that we did for the beginning of the Bringing It show.
Yes.
And that was one of those points when I had like a load of airport security around us, taking us, you know, in full drag around the airport, and as I say, down the runway and onto planes. And I was turning to, you know, Jamie, my producer, and I was like, how on earth? What are we doing? What is this? And it's amazing. You know, it's really brilliant. I'm very thankful for it. A couple of weeks ago, the Metro stuff, you know, never did I think I'd be being filmed on the Metro in full drag in the middle of the day, and then in Metro control and all. I didn't even know there was a Metro control. I thought they did it from their iPads or something. So all the time, even with the Panto stuff, like, what? Like, come on, it's the bloody Empire, man. What's going on here?
Yeah.
I used to go there as a child to watch pantomimes, and now it's me, you know, eternally second on the bill, unfortunately, but man.
I remember when I first, it was one of like the first big gigs I'd done in like with my drag. And I would say it took like my persona to the next level. I remember when I got to work with Netflix after we finished all the filming, I just sat in a dressing room and cried, because I was just like, this doesn't happen to people like me. Like, I was just sat there like, fully like having loads of imposter syndrome, like, oh my god, why is this happening to me? Like, I don't deserve it. Like, am I dreaming? And then I remember going up to finish my shift off, and I'd cried that much that I had no makeup on my eyelids, because obviously my makeup was quite big, it was still on like my, where my eyebrow bone is, and everyone was looking at me like I was an absolute crazed lunatic walking around this bar with no makeup on my eye, but still the rest of my face on. And I remember Heather just looking at me going, you need to get a grip, girl, you do. And I was just like, I can't. And then burst out crying again in the DJ box.
And then I go to Starbucks the day after a show, and people will say that they love my show the night before. And I go, oh my god, I've made it. So that's the biggest achievement I've had.
Yeah, I suppose it's, you've got to be a bit of a people pleaser, haven't you? You know, because you're kind of nothing without an audience. What's the point of, I say this at Boulevard, but, you know, I always thank the audience, well, majoritively, unless they're absolute twats. But, you know, I'd say you're the most important people out of this whole transaction, because, you know, without you, we'd just be doing it to ourselves.
Yeah.
I just want to do it in my front room, you know, and talk to the dog or whatever.
We're like that when we finish the brunches each week on a Saturday, and we always say at the end of the show, we're always like, our biggest thank you goes out to all of you, because it'd be really bloody awkward if we were all sat here doing this show to no one and calling bingo numbers out to no one sat there. Like, it really comes from like a place of like, you have to respect the audience, because if it wasn't for them, we'd be all lining up at the job centre.
Exactly. Exactly. So, thank God people are daft enough to watch this.
Well, exactly. Did you always want to be like a performer, Rory, or was it just kind of something that you kind of fell into?
I think it's always in you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It has to be, whether you know it or not. You can't just, like, you know, wake up one day and go, boom, this is what I'm going to do. I think it's,
right.
it's in you. It's, I think it's personality-based as well, really.
Yeah. You've got to be some kind of level of narcissistic to think that anyone would want to see us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've got to at some point disappear up your own arse and come back with a pair of lashes on.
But love me. But on like the complete opposite spectrum of imposter syndrome, though, is there ever kind of a moment where you kind of go, yeah, I fully deserve that standing ovation at the Time Theatre?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think, you know, the worst thing is false humility. When when people are like, well, you know, I just try my best. And piss off. No, I think, you know yourself if you've worked hard. But I would be the first person as well to come off and go, oh, that wasn't very good. And then people are like, no, it really was. I'm like, well, was it? Or are you just saying that? Because that's the worst thing.
Yeah.
It's the absolute worst thing. Because, to learn is to grow, and to grow is to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're surrounded by people that are like, oh my God, you look amazing. Oh my God, that was fantastic. Oh my God, oh my God. When you're like, shit, and you look like chopped liver with a wonky eyelash. Nothing wrong with being shit and looking like chopped liver with a wonky eyelash. But you know, you should always have somebody there that will say, why don't you try that? Why don't you do this? And you know, if it's said from a place of genuine affection rather than criticism, my husband's just brought me a cup of tea and done a mic drop like that. he'll tell us if he did hard or like that. He didn't like drag, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He quite likes, no offense, he quite likes he's quite into comedy, but then he goes, oh, I don't like stand-up comics. I said, oh, thanks very much. He said, well, no, I like your banter, that's good, but he's not really into the whole drag scene. The whole drag scene. But so it's good to have an outsider, quote unquote, that can you can have that sort of opinion as well.
So do you feel like you've kind of mastered the craft then, almost, or do you feel like you've still got a lot to learn and a lot to do?
Nah, absolutely. Not mastered it, you know. I watch myself back and think, oh God, what are you doing that for? Like, it's in your head how you want to do it, but it comes out. I'm my own biggest critic, really, you know. I'll look at my own stuff and think, nah, that's not good. But what I do lives in the moment, you see. What I say lives in the moment on stage, and it works at that time and probably not after, or it wouldn't before, you know. And then I think, oh God, did I go too far with that? Or, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Or, you know, I'm a born warrior anyway.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have said that. Or, but people love it. You know what I mean? But if it's said in such a way that isn't, you know, there is, of course, that element of hate. But it's not, you know, never be malicious with it, I think, is the takeaway from that.
I think there's also something that comes with, like, you can pretty much, this is not an excuse for anything, everyone, by the way, but you can pretty much say anything if you look like with a wig and a sequin gown on. You pretty much anyone will eat anything up to the most part.
Yeah, I don't know whether I agree with that completely. You know what really pisses me off at the moment? All these people that are like, oh, you can't say anything these days, you can't do anything these days. You're like, well, the people who are saying that kind of thing are the people who want to use racism or, you know, homophobia, transphobia, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just get a bit pissy that they're not allowed to use that, sort of trumpet those views. But there are ways of dressing things up, and irony is, I deal in irony. basically. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of language reclamation is something I've always been very interested in. Now, since my A-levels, I remember doing an English language reclamation, how you take something that can be a negative and you sort of turn it back around to you or your group's purposes.
I did that for A-level too, actually.
Very, very interesting. I mean, I think especially in the way we've grown up and in the communities and whatever we've grown up in as well, it's real, you know, you see firsthand, don't... but yeah, I think, you know, I'm very ironic in everything that I do. And I like to take the views of stupid people, which is mm-hmm. what they are, and turn them into something funny, turn them into a parody, yeah. basically,
definitely.
Of what's going on around you. There's an awful lot of self... you know, you've got to laugh at yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You really have to laugh at yourself, self-depreciation. And always,
I feel like that's when where the character like fully starts to develop, when you can drop that wall of like, I can't take the mick out of myself. Like,
oh God, yeah.
You get some drag queens who are very like pretty, but won't like camp themselves up or won't have a laugh, and it's very dead serious. Like, I have to look perfect, and that's it. And there's no character.
Which is
character
fine.
If
that's what
it.
Some people want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Always find. Sorry, Stacey.
But like, it's. Once you find like that thing of being able to take the mick out of yourself, I feel like that's when like the gloves come off and the real fun in drag begins for me personally. Like, I remember for years I was very much like, got to be like very good looking, got to be like, you know, the best, but I would never like take the mick out of myself. And I remember when I first did Drag Idol and I did that week 2 number All About You, and I just took the mick out of myself being like this crazed fan. And saw mm-hmm. how like it entertained everybody. Like for me, that was, it was a bit like, is it endorphins in your head when you get excited and you crave that again? Like you crave the feeling of being appreciated and laughed at, but like laughed along with.
Laughed
with.
That
makes sense.
They're laughing at what you've created.
Yeah.
They're laughing at your product.
Yeah. Know?
They're not laughing at you, going, oh my God, like you're a bit dick and whatever. But especially that number will always stay with me, was just the most hilarious thing I think I've ever seen. And you know, you were right up there in my face, and I could see in your eyes that you were like, you were bought into that. But you know, you see how much fun you were having at the same time. It was just absolutely outrageous. And again, it's thinking outside the box, isn't it? It's like, it's taking an idea and absolutely running with it and creating something and therefore create a character through that. And wow, that to me is like, you know, it's great admiration from that.
It's interesting that you get like really amazed by people who kind of come up in Drag Idol and create all these amazing concepts and mixes and production, when basically you're doing the exact same thing but just with words. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's a great physicality involved in the stuff that you do, isn't there? I'm not a very physical person, in that I just kind of stand there. And it's all in the face, basically. It's all sort of from chin to whatever moves on my brow, which is, you know, but it's constant editing. The way you edit numbers together and put all this, I think if you do what I do, it's constantly editing in your head.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm going to say next. How am I going to move this along? And, you know, I was going to say before, with an audience, there's no point in going out and just being an absolute bastard. There really isn't. You know, if you go out with negativity, you know, energy is a real thing. If you go out with negativity, you know, like you just can't be arsed.
Yeah.
Then the audience feed off that. You know, you've got to catch your audience straight away.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, my whole actual character is very sort of negative and can't be asked and, you know, angry, really. But you've got to do it in such a way that it's presented with a general air of warmth.
Yeah.
With the sort of the irony and everything that's involved in it. But you should never really put an audience down too much. It's psychology behind it, I've always thought, is that, you know, in the end of it, you always end on a level pegging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, do something and then set yourself back and then set them forward, then set you forward, like a horse race. So you end on a level pegging, unless of course someone's been an absolute twat and then you've just got to clean them, basically.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, which that is doesn't really happen as much as you want, but people want to be, you know, people will send messages at Boulevard and be like, oh my God, will you like absolutely roast my friend? And I think, well, don't say that. Don't push your friend under a bus. Mm. I'll go for you instead.
Yeah.
Don't sometimes, like an egg, do you?
But sometimes I'll get messages for like gigs and stuff, and they'll go, oh, we love drag, we love going to Boulevard. Can you do like what Miss Rory does and just roast us for the entire gig? And I'm like, that's not me. If you want that, go get Miss Rory, because that's just not. No offense, I can't.
If they were willing to pay you, they wouldn't be willing to pay me. That's the thing. The only reason I'm in this now, it's the only reason I'm still doing it, the cold hard cash. You know what I mean?
The cash.
Well, that's where we all get up in the morning, really.
Yes. And why some of us get into bed.
But going back to the successes, I'd have to say from a third party, like watching your career, I'd have to say from my perception, your one woman show that you do at the Time Theatre every year has got to be up there on like the top 10 successes of your career. And like, how did that all come about as like a thing?
2016. So my friend Jamie is a producer. He's got a really quite successful dance school. And Jamie said, right, let's do a show at the Time Theatre. Jamie's won some amazing musicals and stuff. He said, yeah, let's do I want to do a one-woman show with you at the Time Theatre. I said, you'd be daft, man. I'm not going to do that. There's no, people would absolutely love it. So I sort of said, yeah, whatever. Yeah, let's do it. Thinking it would maybe like sell out a little bit of the stalls and it would just be like me in a star cloth and a microphone and all that. Sell out half the stores and everyone. So anyway, then it went on sale and it like practically sold out within 2 days. You know, stores, the grand circle, the upper circle, the gallery. Like, oh my God. And Jamie being Jamie, it's go big or go home with him. So I had this full like sort of production set and fucking videos and all that. Wow, it was amazing. And it was absolutely fantastic. And it's an experience. It'll always stay with us. And then we just did them, you know, from them, came up with different concepts. And I always say with those shows, I do the small part. You know, I just go out there and stand on stage and talk shit. Jamie and Paul and Julie, the production team, they come up with the goods. You know, we sort of come up with a concept between us, but then it's their ideas. Like, right, I mean, 6 years ago today, I think, 6 years ago yesterday, I did What's Up, Hun, which one of my favourites. And we had a massive, 50-foot iPhone interactive on the stage, which, oh, God, unreal, unbelievable. Last year's, I loved the Land of Hope and Rory one.
I've got your sticker on the back of my laptop still.
See, it's we're connected. that one was just such a sort of a well-timed thing with the Jubilee and everything. And I'm a massive sort of monarchist and royalist. And it's with Jamie, I'll say to him, he'll say, right, you know, what do you fancy doing? What would you like? And last year I went, right, let's do like a royal theme thing. That'd be great. I said, I would like corgis. We'll do a video at the beginning. And like the Queen's entrance to the Olympics in 2012. Yeah. So we'll do something like that. So I want corgis for that. I never think he gets corgis. And I want to finish with a sing-along in the style of Last Night at the Proms. So I want a military marching band and a balloon drop with like 1,000 balloons. Thinking you've just gone, sorry, I can't do that, Dan, whatever. Anyway, fortnight later, go to a meeting, Jamie's out, right, I've sorted these corgis out. what the fuck? Are you free next Tuesday? Because I want to take you to see this military band, the Durham Light Fusiliers or whatever they are. I want to take you to see them, to see if they're what you want. What the fuck? What? So, you know, that all came off, and that was just the most fun.
Is there any point where you go, how far can I push this? Like, how far can I sit? Like, how long of a list can I give to the point where he goes, no?
And he's implacable. That's the problem, James. Absolutely implacable. Like this year, he says, right, so come on, you've had your band, you've had your corgis. What do you think about this year? He suggested like a travel theme for this year's show. And he spoke about that for years as well. And I wasn't too keen, but I thought, well, you know, he knows what he's talking about. So I write, okay. Had to be very careful not to make it like Pam Ann, you know, brilliant comedian who does the travel stuff. I said, but I would like I'd like access to the airport for the video, right? Like all area access to the airport and an aeroplane, please. Thinking, I've got you this time, haven't I? I've got you this time. Anyway, a couple of days later, he's like, right, make sure you're free on Monday because we're going to the airport. I don't know what for. Says just to meet the marketing team because they're all massively on board with your ideas.
What?
And that's where that came from. But they're great. They're like a highlight of the year. Those shows. They're so much just absolute fun to do, you know?
And it,
again, not sounding like, you know, it's sort of false humility or whatever, but to think that all those people come, my sister-in-law, I was beating them all, obviously. But like at the last one, she texted me just before and she's like, I'm just sat in the auditorium. I'm like, what the fuck? All these people are here to see you. I'm like, yup. Don't know what all that's about. Must be nothing on the telly this week. but yeah, it's great fun. And it just gets like-minded people in the same place at the same time to laugh at the same thing. And, you know, it's the best medicine at the minute, laughter, when everything's going wrong around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As it increasingly is. But good news that they haven't passed that Rwanda bill. That's great news, isn't it?
Yes.
Well done, everyone.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. And apparently Rishi's going to sack Sue Ellen.
Oh, well, not another sack, Kim.
That's a long time bloody coming. No. There was at one point where we had like 5 prime ministers within 2 months, and every single other performance that I did was basically about the next prime minister that we had and how much of an absolute fuckwit they are. So it was when we had a prime minister every other 2 weeks, and every other performance I did was kind of about the new prime minister and how much of an absolute asshole they are. And it got to the point where I was like, I'm exhausted talking about them. Like, I'm exhausted starting and ending every single performance that I do, which, by the way, everyone's always on board with anyway. Like, being like, this is a performance about how much of a shambles our country is in at the moment. And
my favourite one was when you forgot your Boris Johnson puppet and showed up and just asked the stand if they had a mop. That was like white at the end. And you just did the whole number with this mop in your hand.
No, I cannot take credit for that, actually, because I showed up to the stand and I was like, oh my God, I forgot my puppet. You know the puppet that I had for Idol Final? I was like, I forgot my puppet. And the sound technician was like, we've got a mop. I was like, you know what? Sure, bring it with me. And this so I just stood on stage. It was like dust was flying everywhere, and I was like, so this is who you think it is.
I bet they all got it as well, though, didn't they?
They loved it. They absolutely loved it. Say that again, Stacey.
I was going to lead it to the next question with like all this crap that's going on with the government and stuff, and all like the LGBT community, like the rights being, well, them trying to like remove rights and stuff. Like, do you ever notice, Rory, with like the things that you do, like with working with the metro and working with the airport, like it is like breaking down those like boundaries of, you know, making it the mainstream and like the norm, if you get me. Mm-hmm. Like, you're working with a very like public sector and you're still showing, yeah, I'm me and you could deal with it. And I'm on the metro and you're going to listen to my voice.
Yeah. Yeah,
like
you know, with the with all of this stuff, and it goes on social media because that's what they want it for.
Yeah,
some of the comments are particularly you know, harrowing, especially on the metro one. And you just think, oh God, have you got nothing better to complain about than this. Like, the best one was, because the Met Roll put, like, you know, Miss Rory and then she this, she that, she the other. Mm-hmm. And then people sort of comment, she, that's a he. I'm like, no shit, Sherlock. Clearly is just a man dressed up to look like a woman. Don't call her she. Well, yeah, but I'm playing the character. This is that. But then you can't, you know, it's very hard to get things through to people because stupid is as stupid does. Mm. So you just think, oh, piss off. Really? You know what I mean? And what I'm going to do is, with that money, I'm going to go on a nice holiday and wish you were there with me. because you know, oh yeah, because it's just a bit of a cunt, really. And then you look at their profiles, you're like, oh God, no, you've got kids. Oh no, 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 yeah, no, no. Yeah. What's happening? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the world is changing. And, you know, I like to see the positives. I think if we hang around too long on what's going wrong, it's very easy to get dragged down by it, like a riptide.
Yeah.
You've got to look on what's going right and that society is moving very much. Last July, June, whatever it was, some teachers from my old middle school in Gosforth, I was only there for 2 years and moved up to Pontydwdlm, but Gosforth Central Middle, lovely school. This big group in standing at Boulevard. Like, where are you from? Oh, we're teachers. Oh, where do you teach? Gosforth. Oh, I went to school in Gosforth. I went to Gosforth Central. Big cheer. Turns out there were teachers from there. And one of those teachers happened to be one of my teachers back there. So he's been there for a long time. He's a PE teacher.
Love that.
He stood up the stairs and said, oh my God, Dan, you're like, you've done so well and all this. Do you think? Really? On a Friday night. He said, oh, I've got to get you into school to talk to the kids. You know, would that be something that you do? Right? Like, yeah, possibly, whatever. So anyway, got an email from one of the pastoral heads last year asking us to go in because they had a Pride Week in the school. The head teacher, she's gay. Some of the staff are gay. And the rest are like massive allies, you know. And I thought, my God, this, I mean, Section 28 was going on when we were at school. Not that I ever remember anything about it. Mm. You know, I don't think there was anything, you know, perhaps controversially. I don't think it was carried out in any of my school, and because it was just like, you know, be who you want. Well, I was very lucky in that. I know other people.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I go along to school, and I went along and spoke to the year sixes and sevens, and my God, what a brilliant bunch of kids. I started with, you know, who, put your hand up if you are different. And then none of them kind of put their hands up. And then I said, now really think about it. Look to the person next to you. Are you different to that person? And then the hands started going up. And that was the whole thing. Like, we're all different, but, you know, we can all share the same good values. And it was very powerful, really. And the kids all asked us questions, most of whom were like, who's the most famous person you've met?
You know, asked, Jane like, McDonald.
Yeah, well, Jane. You know, I was hoping they were going to ask the deeper questions. And they did in the end, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was like sort of year sevens and all that who, and year sixes, who were completely attuned to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. The school can do that, you know. And I think that's what you've got to focus on. I looked around and I thought, this is the next generation.
Yeah.
That are being taught well. Their educators are really doing a great job here. And they're very, very open-minded. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, thank God for that. So when you look at these idiots on social media, you think, well, you know, you're not everyone.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, we're never going to live in a utopia where everybody agrees. That's why mm-hmm. we have more than two political parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're not going to change the world overnight, but it's the slow drip, 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 drip.
Yeah.
Natural selection as well.
Do you ever feel like when you go on stage at maybe not Boulevard, but maybe Boulevard, but maybe do you ever feel like you kind of have sort of a, I don't know, like a response, not responsibility, but I guess a responsibility almost to kind of help change the world or help change anyone's minds that are sitting in that audience and sort of agree with those comments on the metro.
Yeah. Thing is, though, if they're sat in Boulevard, they're most likely not going to be the kind of people who are thinking, mm-hmm. oh my God, like, you know, I'm an absolute bigot or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm so bigoted, I'm going to give them £35 of my money. you know, so it is quite easy to be buffeted in one area. It's a bit like social media, really. You know, when yeah. I look yeah. down my Facebook, everybody seems to be of the same mind politically and socially mm-hmm. as I am, because we surround ourselves with like-minded people for the mm-hmm. most of the time, don't mm-hmm. we? And that can be the same in you know, in the spaces in which we perform. Mm-hmm. But then some of the corporate stuff that I do, you get like, you know, massive mixes of opinion. Mm-hmm. A lot of Tories, mm-hmm. who's got the money. but you know, there's gentle ways of doing things. There's three lads come into Boulevard actually, and they're all Tory councillor. Okay, they're all Tory councillors, and you know, I rip the backs out of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're local councillors, so they're not putting bills through or anything like that.
Yeah, sure.
right.
They've comfortably and their bins are emptied. You know what I mean? But you know, they're still Tories. But you've got to be respectful of other people's views. That's
yeah.
the whole point.
Yeah.
And that's the whole argument at the minute, isn't it? That, like, you know, all this snowflake carry on. Oh my God. And it's always the people who say call you a snowflake. They're the biggest babies of them all because they refuse to be open-minded about
things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand people's views on stuff. I can understand people's views on immigration. I don't agree with their views on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of the time people are being drip-fed stuff by the media that, you know, immigrants are bad and they're all mm-hmm. coming over here to, you know, steal our jobs and rape women, you know, make the country a mess.
Mm.
They're not. But I can understand how people are influenced in such a way.
I think it also comes with a lack of education and also kind of pointing the blame at the wrong person.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
So yeah, it's yeah. kind of the government are sort of, oh my God, not to get political, but whatever, who cares, we're here. It's the government are sort of feeding things to people and saying, mm-hmm. this is the reason why your bills are going up. This is the reason yeah. why there's long waiting lists at the NHS. And they're taking it and going, yes, that's right, because they're the higher people. They know what's going on. When really it's completely the other way around. They're the reason why, and they're just trying to shift the blame. And it's sort of trying to find one easy group to target and make everyone turn against them.
Don't fear the immigrants, fear the people who are telling you to fear the immigrants.
Exactly.
I feel
anyway, exactly. This isn't about immigration, it's about me. Shut up, Stacey. Yes,
but kind of like you said something right at the start where you said that you went to prom in drag, is that right?
Well, I did, but I didn't mention that. Yeah, but it was a sixth form party. But then for our sixth form ball, which was at the Marriott at the Metro Centre for some unknown reason, I was in, like, you know, suit for the first part, and then
yeah.
halfway through went up and came down and dragged. It was a bit of a laugh. This is what I did, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Long before Jamie Drag Queen 16.
Mm-hmm.
which I also featured in the original... the original documentary, of course.
Like, where's my musical?
Yeah,
my favorite musical. My favorite part about that documentary is it just flicks to a cliff of you with a cigarette in your mouth, just looking absolutely like over it. And I just, when I was watching it, I just sat there in absolute like floods of tears, just at this clip with you with a cig in your mouth, just being like, no, over it, I'm done.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was maybe, God, 12 years ago now. And look at the success that's come from that. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Great mm-hmm. musical. Coming to Sunderland in September, by the way. Go and see it.
Lovely.
So excited.
Lovely. But when you do things like Boulevard as well, obviously you like kind of get to work with amazing, amazing people. So who is your favourite to work with? Is it Layla or Danny?
Danny. Obviously. Stupid question. No, well, you see, the thing is here, Layla is just Danny's cover for, you know, for whenever she needs to be off, if she's not in good health. So I think she's done mm-hmm. two shows. So, you know, let's not go down the I love Layla, by the way. And of course, Marco is in the show as a boy.
Yes, yeah.
But Danny is hands down one of the most talented people I've ever met. Like ever. And I'm not just saying that because he's, you know, one of my best pals.
Yeah.
But he's incredibly talented, like mind-blowingly talented. Mm-hmm. You know, from a performance point of view, my God, when he dances, I don't know how he makes his body move like that. His choreography is amazing, so mm-hmm. fresh. Costume design, wig design, and then let's not even talk about his graphic stuff, like mm-hmm. on that screen that he literally draws from nothing and creates and ties in with his light and his choreography. Oh my God, he's just like, you know, I watch the show sometimes and I'm like, how the fuck, what goes on in your head? Mm-hmm. How do you do this? He's like an evil genius.
Because I don't think many people know about this, but Danny literally comes up with like the visuals, the choreography, the...
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
When I found all that out, I like my respect level for Danny went up even higher than how high it was before. Like when I found out all like the intricate details that went in, I was just like amazed. Even like when I go to Boulevard now, I sit there and I'm just like in awe because it's just it's magic and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like we went the other week and it was just like one of the like best nights out I've had. But it's just like it's nice to just sit back and watch art.
And that's what it is. You know, it's theatre, really. Mm-hmm. It's,
yeah.
It's not even what I would, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, it's a drag show. I think it's a bit, little bit more than that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You know, it's, yeah, it's just the best. I love it. I'm 13 years, I'm still there, you know, and I'm not going anywhere. Much to the chagrin of Plastique, but unfortunately...
What is your favourite Danny D number? Sorry.
What is my favourite Danny D number?
Miss Rorina.
Miss Rorina. I've loved them all. Well, not all of them. I've loved, yeah. I don't know, actually. I'll tell you what was a really special number was she did Ariana DeBoss from the Tonys.
I was about to say.
Round of applause. That was a very, very special number.
I watched that from the expensive seats at Boulevard at the Drag Idol final because that was the only ones that were free at the time. and I watched that and I remember just jumping out of my seat and I was about to jump off the balcony because I was that happy about what I'd just seen.
She put it in the tail end of the Christmas show last year. And obviously I don't do the Christmas show because I'm off doing panto.
Yeah.
But she asked us to record a few bits. So I recorded them and then she... You know, doing a green screen magic. I don't know how this trickery and witchcraft that she comes up with. But she says, I'm putting it in on the night that you're coming in. So I went in to watch the show with all the cast from Panto. And I stood, we were upstairs, and I stood and watched it. And on, I filled up because it encapsulated everything that had gone on before over those last sort of 12 years. Mm-hmm. So that was a really lovely number. But then, you know, our finales are just epic.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, this current show at the moment is just like, what? This spring show this year was amazing. I was thinking, how is she going to top that? And then she just pulled this summer show out of the air. And it's like, whoa. She's just such a talent, really, mm-hmm. and an absolute pleasure to work with. And it's much more than work with her, though. You know, we're dear, dear friends. I speak to her every day. And she's, you know, just a genuinely nice person who'll do anything for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course, we both share a love of gardening as well.
I love a good garden.
So she's always on, we only moved into this house about 6-7 weeks ago now, so the garden's getting sorted. So she's always popping over. She's like, I brought you this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing that.
I've got she sounds like me, ma'am.
Yeah. Taking a tree out soon because we bought some new hydrangeas to go in and, oh my God.
Oh, lovely.
Wonderful.
I spent one weekend just planting about 4 lavender bushes.
Well, they're going to go boosh, you see.
As you do, yeah. Because I think we've got a bee's nest underneath one of our sheds.
Careful now.
I know. I didn't realize until obviously June came along and I just saw loads of bees just flying everywhere and then going straight under the shed.
Or try and leave them where they are if you can, because they're very important to the bees.
Yeah.
We've had a little mouse in our back garden.
Cute.
Very cute. I spotted it. I'm like, oh my God, look, little mouse in the back garden. But you don't really want mice in your back garden, do you? Then there was only one, so we got a little humane trap and we caught him and put him in the field opposite.
Nice.
And then, like, the next
before
day,
Alan spotted it.
Yeah. Then the next day, his little friend. And then the day after that, his little friend. Anyway, so there was three. I haven't heard any now for about 4 weeks.
You had a full-on mouse family?
Just three. I think it was like, you know, parents and child.
Oh, how lovely.
Maybe. But
I was talking about like mice. I was waiting for my taxi after work last Friday and I was stood at the bus station across the way from Boulevard and the biggest bloody rat ran across my foot and I just screamed and like this random like pisshead had just looked at me like, oh, what the hell are you doing? And I'm just like, this big like black rat had just like run across me. I was just like, oh,
I'd have to be like amputated if that happened. There was a rat in my garden, I'd just sell the house and move. But little cute mouse. But I don't know what I do with bees. Because, you know, they're so very important to us.
Yeah.
But the lavender will bring them all to the garden, you say, because they love lavender. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Chelsea Flower Show. Here we go.
Oh, should we all go family road trip?
I would love to go to the Chelsea Flower Show.
That's your next big achievement. You need to host the Chelsea Flower Show in full drag.
Yes, that would be quite good fun. Right, I'm going to get on so about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that happen.
Ask Jamie. Say, this is the idea for my next Tyne Theatre show.
Yes.
It's all about flowers and I want to go to the Chelsea Flower Show and take over for the day.
And that will absolutely happen. Yeah, I'm going to write that down. I've got a pen for you, Nophia. I'm going to write that down. Chelsea,
make sure you credit me in the video credits, please, as well.
Reader Frisian.
Yeah,
Frisia.
Make sure you spell it right.
Yeah, Frisia. And Stacey, what kind of flower would you be? Stacey Sunflower.
Be a sunflower or a Venus flytrap.
Right, penis flytrap. Or Stacey Salvia, because they grow quite wild. Yeah, they're a bit unhinged. Like, written that down. Watch this space, kids.
What is kind of your sort of relationship with drag at the moment? And kind of where do you sort of, is there any big thing that you want to achieve in the next sort of, well, before you die, really? Not saying that that's soon, but in the next few years.
I've got loads of things I want to do, but I'm not going to tell you what they are.
But do you not want to manifest?
No.
Put it out to the...
I manifest, but in the quiet of my room. I've got some lovely stuff coming up, actually. And every year is a, you know, it's start of the year and think, what am I going to end up to this year? What am I going to do this year?
Mm.
And that's always the great joy and surprise of it, really.
Yeah. But, I mean, that me and Stacey were just talking, actually, because we always kind of sit there and think, like, oh, we've just performed at Northern Stage Pride, which was like a massive, I mean, you've done it for years now, so it's probably like, you know, just you do it with your eyes closed at this point. But we sort of did Northern Stage Pride and thought, this is the biggest thing that we've ever done in entire lives and this is it, our careers are over. And then we go and do other things and then other things and other things. And it's like, God, if we're doing this now, where are we going to be this time next year and the year after? And
yeah, and that's what I'm saying there. One of the great joys is never knowing what is coming next.
Yeah,
but, you know, dream big.
Yeah,
you know, take the opportunities, take the risk. And I think I'm a living example. If I didn't take that risk for Boulevard, then like I wouldn't be doing any of this.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd be living in the house that I live in, and I don't think I would have the husband that I have, and I don't think I would have the friends that I have, and I don't think I'd move in the circles that I'm moving, or go on the holidays that I have, or, you know, general life, you know, as it is. To take the risk, and never look back. Some you win, some you lose. You know,
definitely.
You always stay positive.
And how was getting married in Vegas?
Oh, wonderful. Had the best time. Had the best time. Because, you know, we were meant to get married in April 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously everything just went to shit, did it not?
Oh, what happened? I wasn't awake at that time.
Somebody got a cough, and then like everything had to, and then you had to queue to get into the supermarket. So it was April 2020, and so it was all booked for a place in Northumberland, like a sort of a 3-day do, but this lovely place in Northumberland. And they phoned me and they said, well, you know, this isn't going to happen. So how do you feel about August 2020? And I said, yeah, sure, that'll be fine. We'll all be fine by then. So we booked it in for August. Anyway, August came. They phoned in August, said, what about next March? Booked it in. Anyway, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
went on like that. And then around the Christmas time of 2021, yeah, I was doing Snow White. Chris is like, oh, God, this is just getting a bit stupid now, is it not? Because why don't we just go to Vegas and just do it, the two of us? But because I'm so tight, as Sam, well, we're not going to lose all that bloody deposit. then we decided to do both. So we went over to Vegas for 5 days, got married over there, and then came back, kept what we had, which at this point had been moved to April 2022. Mm. Kept what we had there, but just took out the wedding ceremony. So we just had like a massive, massive party over a couple of days.
Nice.
People staying and people coming up and all that business. But Vegas is just the best place in the world. It's amazing.
Nice. Thank you very, very much for offering a very insightful, inspirational insight into your career and your successes. It's been an absolute honor to talk to you today.
Well, we've scratched the surface.
We could literally talk for like hours and hours and hours. But what we do kind of at the end of every Dragopedia episode is we sort of talk about kind of drag trends and drag things that you love and hate. So is there a drag trend that you're absolutely in love with at the moment?
I don't have a great interest in drag per se. I don't go and watch a lot of drag. Mm. Which is not to say that I don't like it. It's just that
I know what you mean.
It's something I don't do. Time constraints and whatever else.
Mm.
So I think I get all of my sort of drag injection, as it were, between February and the middle of March each year in Drag Idol, which I think is why I'm even more wide-eyed when it comes on, because I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So I don't pay a lot of attention to what's going on around me. I just get on with what I'm doing.
Well, what about in Drag Idol? Was there something that really stood out recently in this year's Drag Idol that you were kind of like, oh my God, I need to see more of this?
I think just the sheer ingenuity of it all, really.
Yeah.
And I think what I like most is the differing of styles within a genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I do like the old school stuff, probably because that's just what I kind of grew up with, I suppose. But I like the way that the old school can be woven in with the newer stuff. I quite like how political drag can be, you know, especially self, Frida. But then I like, say, with Stacey, the way she brings in like an old school element, but adds like a bit of a mad edge to it as well.
Unhinged.
Yeah, I think that would be the word I'd use to describe it. the ingenuity of everything, I love to see. And how much people enjoy doing it as well, you know, because they're not necessarily doing it for the money or to make a living or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're doing it because they enjoy creating something for other people to enjoy. And I think that's really good. And that's a great thing to share, that gift.
We always say that Drag Idol is sort of, around Drag Idol time, it's always a family reunion. Like, you see people that you haven't seen in years just sort of pop up and you're like, oh, look, it's someone's. It's like the one time that everyone really comes together, which is quite nice.
Yeah, and it's the only time I really see anyone, because, you know, I never go out. Very, very rarely, maybe like once a year. So it is lovely to see everyone, to see how well everyone's doing. And it's like, it's one of these things that, say, when you meet up with old friends, it doesn't matter how long you've been apart, You just sort of fall back into it, really, which is always very nice. I mean, it's the only time of the year I see Penny.
Yeah.
You know, I look forward to it for that.
I always say that the final of Drag Idol is like Newcastle's own little Met Gala, because everyone shows up in like drag in their best little outfit.
Yeah.
And it is like a school reunion. It's like, I remember this year's final, we like seeing people from my year, even though it was only like a year ago, like I'd not seen some of them properly in like a good year. It was just nice to catch up and see what everyone's doing. And
is there a drag artist that you are absolutely loving at the moment as well? I know you said that you don't really like kind of watch drag, but is there anyone... is there anyone that you've kind of either grown up with or someone that you're working with at the moment that you're just kind of, I don't know, your favourite drag artist at the moment?
Well, I only work with Danny, really. so it would have to be her, doesn't it, in terms of anyone that I work with. You know, I love Bianca. I just adore Bianca. Mm-hmm. Myra Dubois is an absolute genius.
She's coming to the stand.
Is she really?
Yes, we're all going to go see her.
I love Myra. When is that?
In October, I think. October, September time.
Right.
Because go back to what you said about like liking specific kind of drag and like that sort of stuff. Like, I'm very picky in what I'll go and watch. Like,
I'm very the same.
Like,
yeah.
I'm supportive of every single drag, but I know in my head I want to go sit and watch someone that is the kind of style of drag that I adore, if you get me. Like, I've got time for like every single, like anyone who does drag, I've got time for, but I've got my like little niche kind of like drag I like to sit and watch. And it is like your live comic drag, because it's the stuff that makes you laugh. And there's nothing like better than just sitting there and absolutely wetting yourself.
I would completely agree, and I would nail my colours to that mast. You know, of course, Vivian is a dear friend of mine and has been for many, many years, long before Drag Idol. Adore Viv. She's fabulous. And I tell you what, one to watch in Newcastle at the moment is Plastic.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing a great job. Plastic covers me when I'm not at Boulevard. And then just announced their one-woman show. Where they came up with that idea from. mini-me, you know, but much more. We always used to take the piss and say that Plastic was just mini-Rory, but she's really not. She's very, very funny. I went to watch the Boulevard show over Christmas, and Plastic was hosting in my stead, and I've never seen anyone look so nervous, you know, I was in, but my God, she did a brilliant job.
Yeah. I did a drag brunch with her. It was a Spice Girls one, and she was dressed as Victoria Beckham and just stood there and did stand up. And it was like I've never had the chance to stand and watch them like one-on-one doing stand up. And it was really good. And I was like, try not to wet myself with laughter in front of all these like people, but it was just so like funny.
Yeah. Yeah. A real talent.
She's also one of the ones you can definitely rely on as well. Like, I remember we did the stand and we had loads of time to fill up at, like, because of timings had shifted and stuff. So I had loads of time to fill up and I didn't really know what to do. And I just went, Classic, just go out and just talk for like 10 minutes and then we'll come back. And then she just went away and talked for about half an hour. So,
yeah. Yeah. She's brilliant. But there's so much talent, especially in Newcastle. And there's so much sort of differing talent underneath the umbrella, you know, so many different gifts people have that we use and use very well.
Yes. So
there's always a drag artist on the scene for any kind of like crowd, if you get me. Like, everyone's got somebody that represents their niche of drag that they like.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
That's what I've always championed Newcastle for, because obviously you go to different cities and every city's got their own style, but Newcastle seems to be one of the only cities where you can literally find anything and you will be entertained by anything wherever you go.
Yeah.
You could go to one bar and go, this isn't for me. And then you go down the road and you go, actually, this is more for me. Whereas if you go to any other city, I don't know, if you go to any other city, it's kind of sort of starts to blend in within itself, but I feel like Newcastle, everyone's sort of their own entity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is great. It's a real melting pot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Big up Newcastle.
Of course. Well, thank you very, very much, Rory, for joining us today. I really, really appreciate it. I cannot sing your praises enough.
Thank you for saying yes to coming on.
It's all right. You know, it's quiet afternoon.
So where can people find you, Rory? Where are you going to be next? Is there anything you can tell us about?
Well, of course, Boulevard, Newcastle, uh-huh. BoulevardNewcastle.co.uk. Summer show is now on till the 10th of September, and then from the 22nd of September, the mm-hmm. Halloween show. A lovely Sunderland Empire panto, loads of other stuff, but I can't remember what I'm doing because I don't have the diary app open and friendly. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
So you should, that's what you should name your next show, You Do You, Hun.
You Do You, Hun. Well, the next one, which will be in May next year, I think it's going to celebrate 20 years of Rory, so that'll be interesting.
Oh my God.
Have you got a name yet, or...?
No.
thank you very, very much, Rory. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you for asking me. It's a real
no
honor
problem.
To be asked.
You are, sorry?
Who else have you had on your podcast? Who else is in this Hall of Fame?
Gucci Gabor.
I love Gucci. Great.
Who else have we had? Pebble Dash.
Oh, Pebble.
Oh, God.
This was before I did this, though. So you're my first proper, like, guest.
Yeah, you're the first Stacey guest.
Right. Well, that's an even more... Well, my absolute pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking and seeing you both.
Thank you for having... Well, thank you for coming. And it's been an experience to get, like, beneath the surface of the icon that is Rory.
God bless you all.